Then health got real 18.
Actually, what I actually should tell you as well, that when I was back in Poland, I was back in my hometown, quite a number of Poles who knew my father well, when they kept on asking me about my father. And most of them, at that stage, I said, well, maybe he's still alive, maybe he's not alive. I wasn't sure. Although I sort of heard what happened to him, I still said, because somebody came back and said to me that he saw my father, and there's a possibility that and he thinks that my father is still alive. So I told him, so I was telling everybody this because I wanted to believe it. But when I told the Poles about it, they said to me, oh, we can't wait for your father to come back, because life has never been the same without your father. He always knew how to create business. See, they were walking around, they didn't know what to do with themselves. They were really lost, a lot of them. And they waited only for somebody like my father to come and to start something and to do something. And so from that point of view, they appreciated my father very much, and they really wanted to, genuinely, they wanted him back. So would I, but anyway. So I got to Prague, and I thought I'll make my way back to Theresienstadt, because in Theresienstadt I still had quite a number of my friends who were still, whom I was liberated, and who were still there, so I went to see him. And also, there were lots of transports going from Theresienstadt to Germany. People who decided not to go back to Poland because they had nothing to go back to, because they knew that their families were killed. And they said, what is the point of going back there? Let's go, let's make our way to Germany, because there were all kinds of camps being set up there with the view that they will be all going to Palestine. And in fact, on my path that I got in Czechoslovakia, I also, when they asked for destination, so I put down on my destination Palestine, as it was at the time, because there was no state of Israel. It was still the mandate. Unfortunately, the majority of survivors could not go to Palestine because the white paper was still very much being adhered to. The white paper, which was published and passed, and legislation was passed that only 15,000 Jews will be allowed to go to Palestine, and that's it. And of course, the only people who could go after the war were those who had really very, very close relations, either a son or a daughter or a nephew or. But that is the nearest. Anybody else really had no chance, because the 15,000 quota was almost exhausted. In the meantime, the people were being placed in camps. They were refugee camps, displaced persons camps, as they were called. And quite a number of them were going from Theresienstadt, because Theresienstadt was now being emptied. There was no point holding on to Theresienstadt, there were those who decided to leave early, but there were those who stayed on. But now they were being sent off to all kinds of displaced person camps. But when I got to Theresienstadt and I met some of my friends, they told me that they are all going to England. When I heard that they're going to England, my mind started working overtime, because England to me was my great dream. As a child, I always believed that England was the greatest place in the world. I used to collect stamps, and I had a very large stamp collection and nice album, and my album had a map, and the map showed, for instance, one quarter of the world was Britain and the British Empire. At home, we had cutlery, where it was made in Sheffield. I didn't know it was made. It was madder, because I didn't know any English at the time. but you pronounce every syllable in Polish. I used to read it, Mother in Sheffield, though I was told it was made in Sheffield. Made. My father, whenever he used to buy a new suit, always used to come and say, have a look at this cloth. This is beautiful woolen cloth, woolen worsted. All comes from England. You know, everything that we had in the house that was considered to be the best was always English. And Churchill was my hero. And when I went to the cinema, everything was in English. All the cowboy films, Errol Flynn, to me, English, it was like the acme of civilization, the height of civilization. And I felt, well, this is the most wonderful country. And I sort of, subconsciously, I sort of dreaming about England. And suddenly, I was told that we are going to be sent to England for rehabilitation. And I felt terrible, because I had a mission. I've taken upon myself a mission to go to Bergen-Belsen, to pick up my sister and my cousin, and to take them back to my hometown, to my aunt. So I said to my friend said, come on, why aren't you coming with us? What have you got to lose? You've got nothing. You've got nobody. Why don't you come? So I said, but I have already undertaken to go to pick up my sister. I said, maybe what I'll do, I'll go and pick up my sister, and I will I go back to Poland with my cousin, leave her with my aunt, and my sister and I will go to England. And my cousin's cousin, who was with me, who was going to pick up her cousin as well. So we made our way together with a group that was going towards to Germany, but they were going to southern Germany, to the American zone. We had to go to northern Germany, to the British zone. So I went with them as far as Pilsen. The famous Pilsen beer, and the Americans were still in Pilsen at the time. Soon afterwards, they moved out of Pilsen and they left it to be under the Russians, under an agreement that they had. But Pilsen was actually liberated by the Americans. So when we got to Pilsen, we had to get off the train because the others were going south. We wanted to go north, and we didn't know how to get to north, where to go, how to do it. We were told there's no communication going up north. The trains were not going there. So we thought of an idea. We'll go to the American camp. We'll ask for the American chief and ask them to help us to get there. So I went up. And they looked at us like we were crazy, you know, what are you looking for? But we told them that we need help and can we see somebody? So they said they were very nice about it. And they took us to one of the officers. We told him our story, what we want to do, and he listened and he said, look, I would like to help you very much, but I really can't promise you because there is nothing I can do about it. There is all the communications are disrupted and it will take you a long, long time to get there. So I thought to myself, well, what am I going to do? If I take my time to get there, I will never be able to get back and to Theresienstadt and make my and then manage to get with the group to England. So we decided that to go back. And this time we thought we'll go back to my hometown, and we will bring my cousin with us, and we'll go to England. So when I came to Theresienstadt, I put my name down to that I wanted to go to England, and my cousin Bronja, her name was, she said to me, look, why do we the two of us have to go back? You stay here, you're already here. I will go back, I'll bring Genek, and we'll go to England together. So I said, okay, that's fine. And so I stayed behind. She never came with my cousin, because when she got back to Poland, my uncle, my cousin's father, just came back because he was liberated in Germany somewhere, and he's come back. And once he came back, of course, he wanted to look after his son. He didn't want his son to go anywhere, especially that he was capable of looking after him. Because when my uncle came back, he went to the Polish authorities and he asked for his flour mill to be returned to him. But they said to him, look, this is now being nationalized and belongs to the state. But since you run it before the war and you know how to run it, we make you the manager, the director, and you run it. So, of course, he had immediately a very good position there in the factory, in the flour mill. And so he was able to take care of himself, and he also decided to take care of my cousin. So my uncle, of course, wouldn't dream of letting my cousin go, a 13-year-old boy, and it was to him this was natural that he should look after him, especially that he had the means to look after him. But I didn't know anything about this because there was no communication between Theresienstadt and Poland at this stage. I was waiting, and I didn't hear from them. And in the meantime, time marched on. We were all put, there were 300 of us now, brought together. And we were brought over to England on the 15th of August, 1945. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the background, why we came to England, how it happened that we came to England, because I think this is rather important. In 1933, when Hitler came to power and the German Jews were being chased out of Germany. At that stage, there was no talk yet of the final solution and the destruction of the Jews. But the Germans were being maltreated. The Jews were being maltreated and were being kicked out of Germany. There was set up in England in 1933 a committee which was called the Central British Fund, which was set up specifically to help German Jews. And but one of the main the main programs of the CBF was bringing in young children. There were children transports that came here, and they were taken care of. And this is how a few thousand survived. And of course, during the war, very little was happening other than the fact that the children were being taken care of and helped. But by the end of 1944, when it was realized that the war is coming to an end, and when the news was coming, was filtering back about the destruction of the Jews in Europe, a certain number of people on the CBF. Especially Leonard Montefiore with Mrs. Blond and Mrs. Hahn Warbuck, they decided that when the war is over, that they would like to bring over a certain number of youngsters for rehabilitation. Now, so they applied to the Home Office, and the Home Office gave permission for 1,000 children under 16 to come to England for rehabilitation. So a special committee was set up under the auspices of the CBF, which was known as the Committee for the Care of Children from the Concentration Camps. And we were the first 300 who came over to England on the 15th of August, 1945. In fact, it coincides with the day when the Japanese capitulated. So it's the same day as the VE Day, so I'll never forget the VE Day. Incidentally, talking about never forgetting the VE Day, I find it very difficult to forget any dates. Today, it's the 14th of October, and today also happens to be the day when, the first day when the people from my hometown were deported in 1942, that is 43 years ago. That was when, from the 14th to the 21st, 22,000 people from my hometown were killed in 1 week. Anyway, it's to be dates have got a meaning. There's not a date that I cannot associate with something or other. So this committee sent out emissaries to all the various DP camps with a search for 1,000 children. And to understand the magnitude of the destruction, they had difficulties in locating 1,000 children. And in the end, after about 9 months of searching, only 732 were brought to England. Now, that does not mean that only 732 children under the age of 16 survived, because there were some that who did not want to go or could not go. I mean, like the case with my cousin, the cases with some of my friends whose parents who happened to have a father or a mother who survived, and they didn't want to leave their parents, so they didn't go. But the majority of us who came here to England, when I say the majority, I mean 99% of us had lost our parents. And quite a number, not only have they lost their parents, but they have lost all their families. And they are only single survivors. They haven't got a single soul in the world. They didn't have one then, they haven't got one now, except for the families that they have themselves created and built since they got married. But as far as their past is concerned, the past is completely become obliterated. And in most of these cases, they have forgotten a great deal about themselves and about their families, because they have had no one to talk to about their background. And it's very difficult to comprehend even this sort of desolation that that a person has who has had a very large family. We all came from very, very large families. Now, something interesting happened here. You see, when we came to England, the first group came to Windermere. We were brought from Prague to from Prague with RAF bombers, actually, brought us over. They landed in Carlisle Airport, and from Carlisle Airport we were taken by and lorries to Windermere, and we stayed there from the 15th of August till the end of the year, most of us, because some left a bit earlier. So the first 300 spent the first few months in Windermere. And what a different world it was to us. When we arrived in Windermere, it was really like coming to a different planet. There was the world was suddenly so beautiful. I mean, we've never seen such lovely places. The Lake District is at all times a beautiful place. But for us, we were housed in, not barracks, but they built during the war these single rooms in, I've forgotten what they call these houses. They're not houses, but...
Nissenhuts,
yes, Nissenhuts. That's right, they were Nissenhuts, and they were workers. During the war, there was a factory there not far away making planes, and now they've all been dispersed, and they were empty, so we were given a room each. Just imagine, for the first time in so many years, we were given a room to ourselves. And what's more, I'll never forget, I arrived during the at night. We were, of course, our clothing was taken away from us and burned. We were given new clothing. We had showers, cleaned, and it was late. We went straight to the huts, and we're given allocated a room each. I went to sleep, and at about 11 o'clock it must have been, somebody knocked at the door. I heard some hard knocking, and I looked up, and there was a man looking at me and smiling, saying to me, "You've been sleeping well." I said, "Have I?" I said, "What is the time?" He spoke to me in German. "What is the time?" So he told me the time. I said, "I can't believe it. I can't remember when I have slept so for such a long time." He said, "I've been coming in here a few times, hoping that you'll be awake. But every time I came in, you were fast asleep. But I thought, 11 o'clock, it's time to wake you up." And I remember talking to the man for at least an hour, telling him about the pleasure of sleeping in a proper bed under clean sheets. I could not get over the fact that I was sleeping with clean sheets. I don't know what I said to the man and how I said it or what I did, but I know, I remember he was listening to me, and it was just how I was enthusing over this pleasure that I had, sleeping under sheets. And he told me he asked my name, and I asked his name, and it turned out that he had an uncle living before the war in my hometown, who was a very good friend of my parents. That was what a coincidence, after, you know, out of the blue, just like that. But I have had coincidences like this all the time throughout my life. Wherever I go, I always find similar coincidences. So, of course, we immediately struck up a very sort of close rapport. Actually, he was a refugee himself from Germany as a youngster. He came over in the 1930s, and now he just finished his studies. And he was asked to come, whether he could come and help because of his ability of speaking German, Yiddish, and of course English. But English, of course, was to us at this stage an unknown language. I've picked up a few words here and there, you know, and because I'm always very keen on languages. So I had a little idea about English, but really it was of no consequence. So the same morning, we were given new clothing, and we were running around, and some of the boys, before they got their clothing, they simply went out in their underwear And when the local girls were on a bicycle, they stopped them, and they all thought that we must be crazy. It was really very funny when what we were told afterwards. But we were really like little children who just did not know what hit us. Suddenly, here we were in Czechoslovakia. Although before we came to England, we stayed in Prague for about 2 or 3 weeks, because now we were all back in Theresienstadt. And in Prague we were running around, and we were really painting the town red, so to speak. But suddenly, Windermere was something unique. And on top of it, the weather was absolutely unique. It was the whole of the autumn was just like it is today, you know. So much so that I remember in November we were swimming in the Lake District, in Lake Windermere. And you know, the lake is always very cold, yet we were swimming in the lake. Maybe we were very hardened. And so it didn't. We were used to cold because we always had we never had enough clothing. So after a time, we sort of became anesthetized to it. And so I suppose this weather was like summer to us, and in fact it was like summer. Of course, we immediately were being. We started learning English, giving English lessons. We went on long hikes, climbing and singing, and it was an idyllic life. And for the first time, I must admit, I simply did not worry, did not care, did not think about anything. I just accepted every day as it came. And we were playing games, football, basketball, volleyball. I spent quite a bit of time learning English and going to the cinema regularly. And my main object of going to the cinema was not so much cinema as to learn English. And I remember I was trying to memorize as many words as possible from the conversation in the cinema. And the first thing I used to do when I used to come back from Windermere to our place was to go straight for the dictionary and to check up the words. And I must have been learning words at hundreds a day. And we were learning very, very fast, I must say. I was trying to speak English all the time, also amongst ourselves. Of course, we were speaking Polish to each other. But whenever we met people, we used to stop and talk to people, and people used to ask us, who are we, what we're doing, and so on, and we were making conversation. And of course, the local girls were very interested in us. It was really amazing how, you know, the adrenaline was working. There were amongst us some boys who were a bit older. And there were some of us who, of course, I simply was not thinking about girls at the time.